Welcome to Hockey Central. My name is Justin Bourne. Thank you for joining us today on what is Leafs Garbage Bag Day, where everyone essentially grabs all the gear out of their stall and figures out what to do next with their lives. Everyone is having some talks with the media via Zoom. We're going to hear from Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan later on in the show. And right now we've had Austin Matthews up at the podium talking to everyone. Stewie, have you been following all the quotes from the Toronto Maple Leafs on exit day today?
I've been following up on Twitter, but I'm not going to pretend that we just didn't miss the opening here. And I know the show must go on, but that was kind of awkward. So I'm surprised that Lance didn't give me the go ahead to see who. But again, that the show must go on, business as usual. And I've heard a couple of the quotes. Some of my buddies have actually texted me saying, oh, did you hear what this guy said? What did this guy said? So in Toronto, every single word is under a microscope, and I guess Leaf Nation isn't too happy with, you know, some of the guys now explaining what happened with the season. But let's keep in mind, the team's young, they're inexperienced, the veteran leadership are young guys, the core guys are young guys. It takes time. And the National Hockey League guys and girls that are listening in the hockey land, hockey is hard. So just because you have a good team and you got all the skill in the world, there's more layers that go towards building a Stanley Cup winning team. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are just at the beginning of that stage. And that's, you know, that's the facts.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we're joined by Brian Burke now as well. And Burke, I'll throw this to you in one sec. I just want to read a quote from Austin Matthews, who just made some statements up at the podium. He said, "The perception of how things are going or how the team's been perceived or whatever outside the locker room may be a lot different than what we believe in. Obviously, the results is in the playoffs and what we haven't shown. But with the players we have in this team and the core group being together for 4 years now, we really believe that we're right there. And I got to be honest, we don't really care what other people think or how far away other people think we are or the article they're going to write or all the things they think we need. I think we believe in our management and our staff and our players and this team and in the organization that we're going to power through this adversity and we'll break through eventually. Brian, what did you make of that quote from Austin Matthews?
Well, I think he said all the right things. I mean, what else are you going to say? And I thought he can say what he wants right now because he played so well in the play-in series. He was absolutely magnificent in all three zones. And I think Austin Matthews can speak with authority right now because he was their best player. But I don't know what else you say if you're a player. You're not going to throw your teammates under the bus. You're not going to throw management under the bus. My view on this is very clear. I'm not calling for a change in management level. Like someone asked me on the radio this morning if Kyle Dubas should go. I don't think so at all. But I do think they need to make a philosophical change in how they play. They have assembled a team that's great in the regular season, and that's not good enough.
Do you think, though, that – so if you're Kyle Dubas and you had this vision about, what's going to win in the NHL and the way you want to build your team, and it takes years to kind of shape the team in your vision, which I think they have now.
Okay, we lost Borny there. So what I'm
– Yeah, we're having some technical issues. I am still here. We're having some technical issues. The best guy on this panel, our host.
Keep it with Jeff. The guy with a BlackBerry. Yeah, keep it a guy with a BlackBerry that's still online here. But, I think for me, Berkey, and we've talked about this in studio now, is you have to make major changes. This is not like they lost in the Stanley Cup Finals with this group and they pushed through and they just missed it by an inch. They lost in the play-in rounds. So I think with this group, the way that it's constructed, it's not good enough to do major damage in the playoffs, Berkey. So it's a tough task with the cap constraints, but Kyle Dubas definitely has his work cut out for him.
Yeah, and to me, they do have... Okay, so let's start at the top. And again, a lot of media are piling on the Leafs right now, but I feel that Sportsnet has reacted to all of these things in real time. We have called out these issues in real time as they happen. So go back to they signed John Tavares, which we all supported here, but we pointed out at that time that with the guys they still had to sign, with Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, they were artificially introducing cap constraints, and usually teams with cap constraints have had success. So they signed Nylander. He's the first of the three that signs. We point out that that's, at that time, I said the sixth best player on their team. They gave him $7 million a year. Then they signed Matthews. Then they signed Marner, both for very inflated amounts over what people think should have been paid, what comparable players are paid. Now, we can worry about whether they're worth that money or not. The point is, they ended up with $40 million committed to four forwards, and that's not workable in a cap. Now, you go forward. It's clear they're not big enough or strong enough. It's clear their defense isn't good enough, but they've got cap constraints. So now they go out again, and as you mentioned, not in the first round of the playoffs, in the play-in round. So at some point, you can't. Insanity, I think the definition is keep doing this thing that you know is not going to work. This is four playoff series in a row, and not really even a playoff series, the play-in series, where they weren't big enough and their defense wasn't good enough. So something has to change. I don't think they should make a change at the GM level. I don't think they should
change. And to add to that, Berkey, as well, you know, in times like these, you know, people focus on the problem, not the solution. But I think for now, the Leafs right now, their solution is the problem. The problem was they weren't big enough, they weren't strong enough. And their solution to that is, well, we're going to come in now and we're going to bring in the top scoring defenseman from the KHL. We're going to come in and bring a small forward from the KHL who could put up numbers. And then now Nick Robertson's going to come in and save the day with 40 goals. So, Berkey, I don't think it's all peaches and cream with regards to their solution with next year. But regardless of your cap constraint, you got to find a way to improve your team. We've seen Columbus do it over the years in adding Seth Jones. We've seen other teams make major splashes to improve their team. And I think Kyle Dubas has to make a major move, or we're going to be sitting here talking about the same exact thing next year. You know, they didn't really do well. So right now, they have a lot of great pieces, but they need to do a better job with surrounding the stars with complimentary guys that could do the job.
Hey, guys, what'd I miss? We got everything settled here finally at the S. My first day in the studio, by the way, thanks for being patient with me here, guys. My first day in the studio going back to March, and sure enough, my mic didn't work right off the hop. But glad to be aboard. Justin, I'm hearing footsteps. Not only you're an analyst, but an excellent host as well. So I wonder if they're hiring at the post office. So you guys are just talking about, as you guys mentioned, it is Leafs media day. We're going to hear some clips from a lot of different players, whether it's Austin Matthews or John Tavares or Morgan Rielly. Then hour two, general manager Kyle Dubas will be aboard, Brendan Shanahan and Sheldon Keefe. We'll get you audio from all of their comments as well. But just hearing you guys talk about, you know, roster composition and what happens next, and is it tenable to have $40 million wrapped up in four players up front? These are all legitimate questions, and these are all, you know, issues that have been talked about, will continue to be dealt with. You know, and it almost seems as if, and Berkey, you were talking about this, and Stewie as well, when you look at philosophical change, I don't know that it's going to be sea change, Berkey, with the Maple Leafs specifically. But the fact that Dubas went out and picked up Kyle Clifford, I think, is a sort of a little bit of a philosophical shift in the way that Dubas thinks. I'll be curious to see if someone like Radko Gudas ends up with the Toronto Maple Leafs, which would be somewhat of a philosophical shift. So I don't see this thing turning around 180. Like, I don't think the 2020 Maple Leafs are going to turn into the 2007 Anaheim Ducks by any stretch of the imagination. But does it not seem to you as if it is nudging that way anyhow?
Yeah, and the reason being is they've watched the product fail now repeatedly. So at some point you say, and I really liked it when they brought Kyle Clifford in, and I do think they have to make a psychological, philosophical shift at the top in how they construct the roster and how they play. And to me, that was a good sign. And I think their analytics-driven analysis is we can win 6-4. And that doesn't work in the playoffs. And when the hitting gets ramped up and you don't have the personnel to answer, then all of a sudden your skill guys don't always appear. So to me, I think it is going to require a psychological shift. The thing about this that I would point out to people is Kyle Dubas is a really smart guy. He's a really good guy. And I think he's watched the product and said, we've got to make some changes and maybe shove the analytics people to the side a little bit. Not change, not a 180, like you say, not a total reversal of direction, but a pivot. And a pivot and say, okay, we watched this happen. Now our D needs to get better. And that's why I say that the logical piece to move for me is William Nylander. And everyone says, oh, you hate Nylander. No, I don't. I think he's a good player. But I think he's more of what they've got, especially with Robertson coming on the scene. I'm not sure they need all these small, soft skill guys.
Justin, thoughts?
Well, I just knowing Dubas a little bit, I find it hard to believe that suddenly it's going to be, all right, let's grab a bunch of heavy guys and plug them into our lineup, and that's going to fix the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I can see him learning on the fly here and saying, you know, we need a certain more, you know, a little bit more of a certain characteristic that maybe we can still find with skill. And the name I bring up is just someone like Colton Parayko, who still can be big and physical but also has skill. And, of course, you can't just throw out fantasy names and add them to your roster. But I'm saying that would be the concept, is can we find what we need, which we do believe to be physical play and edge with some skill somehow. So I don't see him just saying, you know, turning, you know, as Brian said, he's not going to make a 180 here, but I can see him at least learning from the last few years and taking that education, trying to find guys that fit the mold while still not abandoning his vision.
It seems as if, sorry, Stewie, do you have a thought on that one?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Gudas. They already ran all these guys that they need now. They ran those guys out of town. They ran out Polak. They got rid of Martin. They got rid of the guys that overachieved for the most part due to their cap number. Connor Brown, Tyler Ennis, Uncle Leo. Those guys were, you know, components that are part of championship teams, in my opinion. And now that I'm looking at it now and doing the full autopsy, as Berkey likes to say, maybe getting rid of Zaitsev wasn't a good, you know, conversation, wasn't a good solution as well. And I know he had, you know, too much term for his cap hit, but they needed they needed a bunch of guys on that back end that kept it steady Eddie. And we saw what happened when Jake Muzzin went out of the lineup. Everything fell apart. So they need guys, solid NHL guys. You can't bet the farm and saying, well, you know what, we have two KHL guys coming in, we have a rookie coming in, mm-hmm. That's going to be our solution to our problem for this year.
The reason that in a lot of ways, Gudas is an interesting name, much like Kyle Clifford was an interesting name. And if you guys can recall the initial press conference when Jack Campbell and Kyle Clifford were introduced to the media, one of the first things that Kyle Dubas went out of his way to mention about Kyle Clifford were the underlying numbers, where you think of Kyle Clifford as a big, tough winger, big hits, all of it, you know, defend his teammates. But if you just look at the play and you look at the results, the underlying numbers are really good for Kyle Clifford. Like, this is someone that can play. And the same thing is said about Radko Gudas. Like, if you look at the underlying numbers for Radko Gudas, they are really good. I know we focus on the hits and the suspensions. Oh, he's a big, dangerous, tough defender. I understand all that. But if you peel that onion a little bit, you find out there's a really good defenseman to put in the right position. 2-1 Bruins, by the way. Boston just scores. And I think that if you're Kyle Dubas, those are the tougher players that you're looking for. It's not just go grab Roman Polak because we need someone big that can shovel snow in front of the net. It's got to be, yes, you can be big and strong, but there also has to be some hockey there. There also has to be something we can point to numerically and say, that's why this guy is on our team. Those guys do exist.
I think Gudas is Martin Marincin that woke up on the wrong side of the bed and coaches confidence. I think that's the only difference.
I don't know, man. His underlings are good.
I'll check the Carfax.
Berkey, go ahead.
No, I mean, we're going to sound like a broken record here. I think it's the question is, I think, what went wrong? And then the next question is, how do you fix it? So what went wrong? They played a more determined team. They had a wonderful comeback in game 4 that no one will ever forget. And I joked on there that I can't wait to hear people saying they were at that game. Like, when I was the GM of the Leafs, I must have met 16,000 people that were at the game in 67 when they won the Cup. And I'm pretty sure there's 40,000 that claim they were there. But what went wrong? And they lost to a more determined opponent that played north-south. They had a better defense. And then how do you fix it? And to me, it comes back to, okay, I don't care if you got 20 GMs, watch that series. And they watch game 1, 2, mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5. And they turn and say, okay, vote. What does this team need? They're all going to vote for a better defense. And Jake Muzzin on championship team was a number 3 defenseman. Here he's a number 2. And he's been excellent. But when you lose a guy who's really a number 3 defenseman on a good team and you're helpless after that, that's not a good sign.
I know for a fact right now, one thing that is on Kyle Dubas's mind is the old "don't let perfection be the enemy of good," I believe is the expression. Something to that effect, where it's like, they believe that they had a good team. They believe that they were super close against Columbus. And I don't believe that he thinks that lacking to, you know, get through that final game means that the plan is bad and that he needs to completely blow it all up and do something. So I don't think you're going to see major, major changes here, but they're definitely, you can't do nothing. You can't just go ahead, as Berkey said, same old, and think it's going to be different.
All right, let's hear some clips from some of the players. It is Toronto Maple Leaf Media Day, an hour or two of this program. This is a two-hour edition of Hockey Central. Smith and Jones is back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We're going to hear from Kyle Dubasin, hour two. You'll hear from Brendan Shanahan and Sheldon Keefe as well. So it is end media day for a lot of these players. We'll start with John Tavares here. And this is what the captain says he will take away from this season.
It's been a pretty miserable couple days. Obviously, it's not where we want to be. And I think, obviously, what we want to achieve and what our goals are. I think the biggest thing is just the difficulty over a long season, the ups and downs you go through, and really, you know, staying a little bit more even keel, I think, with our game and, you know, the amount of times we had to bounce back with our backs against the wall in many tough situations, the way we played at times, and obviously a lot of the changes that we went through this year. No question, we have to find a much better level of consistency that, obviously, when you do go through those ups and downs, your ability to have confidence when things aren't going well, to play the way that we want to play, and obviously that obviously really prepares you for the challenges that you face in the playoffs and the postseason. So I think certainly that comes to mind, you know, like you said, even just on after the first couple of days, still reflecting on a lot of stuff.
Berkey, is it the sign of an immature, good team that will have really deep lows and really high highs? Like we've seen, and John Tavares talks about this in that clip, you know, backs against the wall. Oh, geez, we've got to beat Tampa because we just laid an egg against the Florida Panthers and the game was over by the time the first intermission Zamboni was on the ice. Is that the sign of an immature, good team? The fact that you have to have those super highs to offset your really low lows?
Yes, it is. But I think the narrative fails where, and again, John Tavares can say what he wants to, because I thought he played really hard and really well in the series. He was really good. Those guys can say what they want. I think the flaw in the narrative is that we're like the Washington Capitals that couldn't get past the second round for so long and then finally won it. These guys haven't won a round, and I don't see the formula leading to success. If I had confidence that this team would evolve into the type of team that can play playoff hockey, I just don't see it. I think they need to make some changes. And I've been vocal about this. I've been open about it. Everyone knows how I like my teams to play. I'm not advocating that. I don't think Kyle's ever going to have a Brian Burke team. But he's got to have a team with a better defense. It's not all about – it's partly big and ugly. They're not ugly enough. They're not big enough. But it's also – they're not good enough on the blue line. They've got these magical forwards. They've got a great top six. They've done a good job drafting. They've done a good job developing. They've done a good job with the forward group, but you've got a regular season team now. You've got a 100-point team that can't win in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Stewie?
I'll jump in if Stewie's on mute right now. And just the, you know, one thing that strikes me as sort of, I guess not hypocritical, but it would just in following Leafs Twitter and what makes them most upset, you know, one of the things they want is experienced guys, guys who've been there and guys who've, you know, been in playoffs and been through rounds, you know, and then they say, well, these guys don't have it. We got to trade these guys and get someone who has some experience. It's like, well, these guys are getting their experience. And it strikes me as they would have learned a lot of lessons after these past 4 years. And that doesn't make them different people entirely the next time you take a crack at it. But it's tough to watch these playoff rounds, watch them beat Boston, you know, six times out of the two playoff series, and watch them beat Columbus a couple times and say that they're that far off for me. And that experience can make the difference between next time getting through. So, you know, I think there's something to letting this group figure it out, and they've had a bunch of cracks, but it's not been that many. They've been young, and I think that they can be better with this experience, and I don't think that they're that far off.
McGinn, by the way, has just scored for Carolina, shorthanded goal. We're all tied up at two. Sorry,
I'm back.
There
you go. I was going to say, like, you know, these are sort of now where you don't really want to have a hot mic, and you want to keep to the cliches because the reporters are going to really pick your words apart. And it's like me with, you know, I'm at home with my wife, and I'm arguing, saying, I'm tired of the garbage pulling up. I'm tired of this laundry never being folded. How come no one's ever feeding the dog? Then I look at it, and it's like, those are all my responsibilities. That's the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing. So it's guys when they're talking, it's always they're talking about themselves. But at this time, the big guys got to sort of look in the mirror and say, you know what, we need to get this done, because I'm telling you, another couple of years of this, it's back to square one with this whole entire group.
Yeah, I think it's one more season with this group, with the quote unquote big four. Let's get back to more clips here. This is John Tavares on what we've been discussing, really. What needs to change?
Well, obviously, when you know, we have high expectations and, you know, we don't come close to meeting them, and, you know, we're in the situation that we're in, I think obviously there's going to be questions, and people may expect large changes, significant look of a team or whatnot. But, you know, for me, I think, you know, obviously we have tremendous youth and it's been talked about a lot. But I think the harder thing to do is stay in the course with the group, and for us looking internally to each other, you know, asking a lot of tough questions and challenging one another to be better, and how we can find our way, to where we want to get to. So I think there's no question that management is obviously going to do everything they can, you know, give us the best team possible. And, you know, obviously want to improve the areas that we need to improve in, and they'll make those determinations, you know, throughout the off season and their analysis. But, you know, I think certainly the type of group we have, the type of talents and skill sets, it can be pretty special if we can, obviously come together and find our way. You know, I think obviously we know what we want to accomplish. It's more about, I think, what we're willing to do to get there, and you know, continuing to challenge ourselves, get ourselves outside our comfort zone, and the sacrifices that we need to make, and finding ways to do that as a group and as a team to obviously get over the hurdles and challenges that we're facing.
What we're willing to do to get there. Is that a quiet scream from John Tavares? What we're willing to do to get there?
Well, I think when I listen to John Tavares, who I admire very much, I don't know him well, I know him to say hello to, that's it. But I admire the way he plays, and I thought, again, he can say what he wants. I thought he was really good. And I think that was a mistake in Game 5 to not break up the big line. I know why Sheldon Keefe did that, but they were all around it. I think they would have scored, found a way to score if they'd stayed with it. Anyway, I think it's a quiet scream, and it's a challenge to his teammates. But I think what he's getting at is, you remember the last game they played against Tampa? They did everything right.
The 2-1 game.
2-1 game, and that's a playoff score against a great team. They did everything right. They played between the dots. They were below the puck. All the little details. And you say to yourself, okay, they're capable of playing like that. So they get in the playoffs, and they don't play like that, or the play-in round. So I think it's a challenge to his teammates that it can be done. We know we can do it. But I think this narrative, again, it fails where you say, okay, do I have confidence that this same group of players can get the job done a year from now? And is this the Washington narrative? And I'm like, is this the, you know, the teams that are in it and good but never great? Mm. Is this the St. Louis tale? We're good but not great for years. They're not good. Good teams win rounds.
The thing for me, Berkey, is that they came in and they did play, you know, the way that we're talking about. You know, as you said, you know that they can play that way. They did play that way in that first game, but they didn't get rewarded because, you know, they lost that game where they get shut out in the first game of the series, and they played tight D. They played discipline. I feel like that's one of those games where if you're the coach, your biggest sell job is convincing your team that we didn't get the result today, but if it looks like that every day, we are going to be successful. And that's a tough sell to a young group when it doesn't result in a win right away. And I think that hurt Toronto a lot in this series, playing tight and disciplined and not getting the win in game one.
But I think this sort of falls now on the players now. And again, I advocate for the players, but this is on them. They already fired the coach. You know, that was the sort of the narrative. Hey, they're not responding to Babcock. Keefe's not going anywhere. They got to find a way to get it going. And I think, you know, management has to send a message to the group. Berkey's mentioned before that he's had to trade players, you know, over the years because they had to send a message to that group. And I remember when I was in Carolina, Jim Rutherford, for putting me on waivers, and then I cleared. He knew I was going to clear, but he said it to, he did it to do a message, send a message. And I thought it was business as usual. He's like, no, it's not business as usual. Next time you don't, next message that for you is going to be either a trade or we're going to buy you out. So that got my act in order. So I think these guys sort of need that message sent. Hey, it can't be business as usual. We can't just say, well, we'll get them next year. We're going to get better. All the other teams in the National Hockey League are going to improve as well. So this is on the players. They got to now look in the mirror and say, you know what? We have to elevate our game. And it's not just because of their big contract and their status within the National Hockey League. They have to do it for their own pride as hockey players as well.
Yeah, and Stewie, I'd only disagree with one thing. They've been given that opportunity now multiple times, and it's failed. I think it is time to make some changes in the personnel.
I believe the phrase that you've used, Brian, to what Stewie is referring to, give the team a shakeup, move somebody else, waive someone, is shoot a hostage.
Yep. Yeah, I remember we had a guy in the minors who was troublesome for us. He had a little click on the team, but he was a really good player, so we traded his best friend. You know, shoot a hostage, send a message, and then that didn't work, so we traded his next best friend. It didn't work, and finally we got rid of him. But I'm not talking about shooting a hostage. You go back, look at the chronology here. They switch out the assistant coaches last summer, try and save Mike Babcock's job. It doesn't work. They bring in Sheldon Keefe. Sheldon does a good job, and he should be immune from any discussion here, in my view, as far as fault or blame. They make the coaching change, and the players don't respond. They play better, but still the inconsistent results, the 6-4 games, they lose to emergency backup goalie. I mean, talk about a low point. And so, to me, I've seen enough of this movie. I want a different ending. I think it's time to change the cast.
On that, we'll pause. More in a couple of moments from Maple Leafs players. You'll hear from Morgan Riley on the consistency issue and Austin Matthews on his emerging defensive game. And where is the killer instinct with the Toronto Maple Leafs? So those comments coming up next from those Maple Leafs players. Hour 2 will bring with it Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe, and Brendan Shanahan. They are all on a Zoom call at the top of the second hour of our show. It's a big one, roundtable style here. Everyone is aboard. Jeff Merrick, Brian Burke, Justin Morin, Anthony Stewart. More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in a moment. Welcome back to the program. It's our Hockey Central roundtable of sorts. The full crew is here. Berkey, Barney, and Stewie. Yours truly, Jeff Merrick, playing the keyboards. You're going to hear from Kyle Dubas in hour 2. You will hear from Brendan Shanahan. You will hear from Sheldon Keefe. It is media day for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they're doing a Zoom call. We will cut up a lot of their clips, their answers, their observations, and present them to you in the second hour of the program. Meanwhile, guys, really quickly, so I wanted to get this in, and we'll talk more about it a little bit later on in the 2-hour show here today. Thought on yesterday, before I get back to these Maple Leafs clips, 5 overtimes, Dallas and Calgary play a complete game during the marathon overtime between the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Braden Point ends it, and he's looked fantastic so far since the return. Berkey, we'll start with you, whether it's Corpusalo or Seth Jones or fatigue or whatever it is. What stood out for you yesterday afternoon / evening?
I was so impressed with the players on both teams to play that long and continue playing that hard, even after the ice got crummy and guys are fatigued. My team's never played past the double overtime in the playoffs. But we had 2 double overtime games in our series with Vancouver the year we won the Cup. And the players, so you go through the time frame of a team on the road, you'll eat your meal around 1 o'clock, 1:30 maybe, and then you go take your nap and then you go play. So the game ends at 10 o'clock, say, and they've got 20 pizzas waiting for you in the dressing room. They've got good food on the plane, on the charter, but they've got food for you right away because you're starving.
Just get something in.
You're starving. So first, we came out at the end of the game. The players didn't eat any of the pizza. But after the first overtime, they're shoving it into their mouths. Like, guys would eat 3 pieces of pizza and go out for the second overtime.
Oh,
crazy. They're the worst thing you can put in your body. But I was impressed with the durability and effort of the players and the stick-to-itiveness. That's not really a word. Also, I felt as the game went on, Tampa took over the game in the overtimes. Not the last overtime. That was pretty even. In fact, Tampa scored, I think, in their first shot in that overtime. But earlier in the second and third overtimes, I would see Tampa gain the zone and then maintain some zone time.
Hmm.
And Columbus would have to chase around. And then when Columbus got the puck, they'd have to get to the red line, dump it in, and change. So I thought that Tampa had the better of the play. Korpisalo was magnificent. I'll never forget that game.
I don't think any of us will. Stewie, I remember Kelly Rudy telling me after the Easter epic where he made, you know, he loses the record yesterday to Jonas Korpisalo, but still made 73 saves back in 1987 against the Caps. He said when he took his skates off, he was so dehydrated that his toes curled the minute he took the boots off. Could you feel for the players yesterday, Stewie?
I could, and I remember being in a double overtime in the minors with Chicago Wolves versus Jamie Benn's Texas Stars, and I remember in that double OT halfway through, I'm like, I got nothing left. I literally have nothing left, I was telling myself, and I said, I have one more shift in me, and I'm going to have to go to the coach and say, I can't go because you're low in sodium. I would remember actually putting about 4 tablespoons of salt in a Gatorade bottle and chugging it just to try to get some electrolytes in my body. So that's a double OT. I could not imagine that five OTs. And as Berkey said, Columbus was almost sitting back as if they were waiting for 12:01 to strike and Tampa Bay to turn into a pumpkin so they can score the winning goal. So it was definitely a game of mental fortitude, and Tampa Bay ended up coming up on top.
What stood out for you, Justin?
Well, a couple of things. First off, that's a shame for Columbus because when you're the underdog, you need a game like that. I just don't know if you can take a punch like that in round one and survive. But what stands out for me is, so I played in a triple overtime game in the ECHL, which I scored the overtime winner, by the way. But my memories of it are just how short your shifts are because you're so, well, I was anyway, so afraid of getting caught out a second too long and being the guy responsible for making everyone play that long and making the error that cost your team the game. So you're always changing, going the right way. And it's like, you've been on for sometimes 25 seconds and your team is headed headed into the offensive zone. Sometimes it was like, I'm going to get off the ice because if this play goes back the other way and I have to have a 45-second shift right now, I'm going to kill us. So it's such a different level of game management, managing your own energy levels to make sure you're not putting yourself in a position where you can kill your team.
The line of the day, by the way, guys, after it was all said and done, Seth Jones, who played 65 minutes and 6 seconds, that is a new record in the NHL, asked how he feels, said, deadpan, I'm fine.
Yeah. He looked like it, too.
Yeah, you know what's cool in the playoffs? You get a real close look at players that you don't see that often and don't get a real close look at. And I'm telling you something, Seth Jones, I knew he was a great player, but he's even better than I thought he was. Oh. What an elite defender, elite puck skills. He can join the rush. And Zach Werenski right there with him. I mean, boy, what a pair.
They're going to turn the Norris tap on for Seth Jones one of these days, and they're just going to come pouring out. That's how good that guy is. All right, back to some more Maple Leaf clips. We're going to hear from Austin Matthews here in a couple of seconds, but want to get these Jake Muzzin clips in. This is media day for the Maple Leafs, so the balance of this program, it's a two-hour show if you're just joining us. We'll go right to 2 o'clock. We'll hear from Leafs general manager, coach Brendan Shanahan will be aboard as well. Leafs talking today. So let's hear from Jake Muzzin. We've talked a lot about, and Stewie talks about this all the time, younger players needing to learn the small things, like all that kind of stuff. Here's a veteran who's been there before and who's done it, who's won Stanley Cups. This is Jake Muzzin on what the kids need to get into their heads.
Well, we got to understand that it's, like I touched on earlier, it's a tough battle, and it's hard to win, and we got to understand that we got to work harder and compete harder to get to the next level. And, if we're not learning from this, then we're really losing. So I think, I hope guys understand that we got to dig in to the next level, and that'll bring this team further along.
Compete harder, Brian Burke from Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, when I watch these games, I didn't really ever watch and text. I'll text Stewie during the games or you and say they're not working hard enough. I don't think that's the issue. I think he's talking about competing, not effort, but more winning battles, and they just don't have the personnel to do it. To me, they can talk all they want. They're saying all the right things, and Jake's right. But it's easier to compete and win those battles if you've got people that are suited to do it better. So to me, again, I it's going to sound like piling on, but I have watched this movie patiently, and it always ends the same. It always ends up in a train wreck. I'd like to see the good guy ride off into the sunset with the girl, and I don't think they have the people to give me that ending.
Borny?
Well, the thing about the whole work ethic, and we need to work hard, and you know, it doesn't strike me as a team that doesn't work hard. But Berkey's point about just like it being a personnel thing, that they don't have guys that naturally think on the defensive side of the puck and naturally think, just think about doing the little things over the course of the game. And every time they get the chance to take the day off or shift off, they do, which to me says it's a consistency of work ethic. And throughout the regular season, if they show that, then they'll be able to win more games. They'll be able to get higher in the standings. They'll be able to be a favorite in a playoff series. And again, this Columbus team had as many points as them. You know, they really need to have that consistency of work ethic throughout the regular season so they can face someone, an easier opponent in the first round. And all of a sudden, they're going to look like super hard workers because they beat a team that's not as good just by having more consistent effort.
Stewie, thought on that one?
Yeah, I just think it's too tough to come out of the coal mine looking like gold. And when you think of teams that win the Stanley Cup, you're thinking about guys coming out bleeding, sweating, and you know, some of them can't even put it into words how ecstatic they are in winning the Stanley Cup. And just with this group, you don't get that. And again, we can dive deeper into it later. But then this group is just not that group that digs down when it times counts. Could you imagine? I could not picture Toronto Maple Leafs going five overtimes without a breakdown, a major breakdown by the end of the first OT in the last 10 seconds. So that's a culture thing. That's a hockey culture thing with this group that they have to clarify. And you got to listen to guys like Muzzin and guys that have been there and won Stanley Cups, because it's not easy. It's not easy winning that Stanley Cup.
We're going to forgo the other Jake Muzzin clip. I want to get to this Austin Matthews clip. I want to make sure we get this one in. This is Austin Matthews on his defensive game and killer instinct with the Maple Leafs. Here's Matthews.
This year, a lot of people, you know, noticed you took great strides defensively. How much was that a goal for you coming into the season, and how satisfied are you with where your game personally is at defensively?
Yeah, I think each year, I think I've just kind of taken a step forward in that regard. And I think it's a lot of it's just kind of experience, you know, just being in the right positions at times. And a lot of it's just competing out there, you know, wanting the puck, I think, you know, throwing around my body a little bit more, but also, you know, takeaways, I think, are a big part of my game and something that I try to pride myself in. And I think a lot of that just you learn off of experience and playing more games and playing really good players that, you know, kind of have that edge as well and trying to learn from them.
I remember during the pause, you mentioned killer instinct as something this group needed to develop. Where do you think the Leafs are in terms of having that killer instinct?
I mean, it's tough to say. Kind of a hard question to answer. I'm not really sure I have an answer for that, honestly.
You know, for the longest time, and I think you can say this about all young teams, any team that's going through a rebuild, wins and losses are one way to measure it. But when it's a rebuilding team, I think the only question you ask is, are the kids getting better? Are the kids getting better? Regardless of where they are in the standings, are the kids getting better? Now, the Maple Leafs are past that. They're past that phase of us just saying, oh, did Nylander have a better year? Oh, he scored 30 goals. Did Mitch Marner improve this year? Same for Austin Matthews, Morgan Riley. The Leafs are past that. Having said that, there is still going to be growth with all these players. Did anyone on this team take as big a stride, Berkey, in their game this season than Austin Matthews?
No, but this is not a revelation to anybody. We've been commenting on that in the broadcast right from early in the year. I think Austin Matthews is one of the most improved players in the NHL because he committed to good defensive coverage. You know, people don't realize sometimes that on every NHL team, the key defensive zone forward is the center. And there's a few teams that play man-on-man, but generally speaking, the center has to do more work, get low, win battles. And Austin Matthews made a concerted effort to be better in the defensive zone and also recover pucks I thought he was vastly improved despite the great goal total. He made a commitment to playing in all three zones. He's not a 200-foot player. That term's overused and should only be used to really elite players who play truly 200 feet. But he's a three-zone player. He's now playing in all three zones. He made tremendous improvement that way. But we've pointed that out. Like, this is not like, by the way, Austin improved defensively. We've praised him lavishly during the broadcast because he has.
Stewie?
Well, I think it's up to management, you know, to worry about, you know, putting him with guys that are going to cover up for his defensive lapses. But Austin Matthews is an NHL superstar, and this is just a natural evolution. Whatever he's lacking in, he's going to naturally just get better and better. But we don't need him to win the Selke. He almost won a Rocket Richard trophy. So it's up to management now to put him with Jay Pandolfo or get him a Steve Madden to sort of cover up for his defense, because we need him scoring goals. We need him out there in the last minute scoring big goals. And I say we, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I know the Leaf fans, oh, Stewie, you're a homer, blah, blah, blah. But they need him scoring goals. But you're naturally going to get better. We were talking about Sidney Crosby a couple of years ago saying, he can't score a lot of goals. You know, he doesn't have the shot. Then he goes out, works on it, wins a Rocket. So superstars, they naturally get better. Mm. I think it's up to management to surround him with guys that can now, you know, complement him and the other stars of the team.
I think the mindset changes too as you get on your career. You know, I think in particular, the Dubois goal that made it 3-3 when Columbus came from behind. So I guess that's game three. Like, Nick Robertson and Kerfoot are battling down in the corner in the offensive zone, and they're both cheating on the offensive side of the pile. Just thinking, boy, if this thing pucks, you know, bounces out, I've got a chance here to create something. And I think, you know, seeing the other players come up the ice to speed after that, you learn after years in the league that you kind of have to have in mind, you know, a defensive side of play at all times. And that's something Austin Matthews has changed about his game, is that it's not just about, if this works out, I'll get points. It's, you know, what's the right thing to do for a center? And that's that he's shown great growth there. And as Berkey said, that's not necessarily new information, but in this series, it was all on display as he was super effective all over the ice.
You know, I think the one thing that we don't talk about enough when it comes to Austin Matthews, and for me, Marian Hossa was the best at receiving passes. You could throw anything at Marian Hossa and he would take it clean. There's an old saying in hockey, as you guys know, you can't give a good player a bad pass. Good players can take passes no matter how awful they are. And I don't know that I've seen in this game right now a player who's able to take a bad pass better than Austin Matthews. You can throw garbage at Austin Matthews and boop, no problem, take it off my skate up to my blade and I'm in the zone. Like, you, I don't know anyone else in the league. Crosby's good at it too, but Matthews takes passes better than anybody in this game. Agree or disagree, Berkey?
I agree, and often at top speed. Like, he can do that at top speed. The mark for me of a superstar offensive player is a guy who can do difficult things with his hands, make plays at top speed. Very few players can do it. Connor McDavid's the best example. Pavel Bure was my best example of a player I ever had. He could do everything at top speed. Austin can do it at top speed. He also mentioned starting to use his body more. He is starting to use his body to protect the puck. He's throwing the odd body check. He realizes now he's a big, strong guy. He's not just fast and has great hands. He's a big man.
I just think of the hands thing, Berkey, like when great players like Nick Lidstrom is so good. Guys who try to dump the puck behind him and you just smack it out of the air. Last night in OT, a puck almost jumps past Victor Hedman to a streaking Liam Foudy. He one hand backhanded it out of the air. It's truly like that hand eye is a big part of a superstar skill set. Crosby obviously has it too. But yeah, Matthews, I mean, you can pull the pin and throw it his way and he'll settle it down real easy. It's an unbelievable talent.
Stewie, you teach these skills. He the best at it? Taking a bad pass.
He's one of the best. You can put in his legs, but just how he recovers, if it's in his skate, how quickly it gets up to get that release off. And he's got a lot of tools in his bag. I'd like to see him now score some more goals other than the one T. They were sort of zoning in on that this year with Columbus. So, but best release in the league. One of the best players at getting that shot off, no matter where you pass it to him. And I remember, you can give a bad pass to a good player, because I remember Joe Nieuwendyk coming up to me and saying, "Stop throwing it in my skates, kid."
And he was one of the best at taking passes, too.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Stu? What did you say? Yes, Mr. Nieuwendyk. Okay, sir.
I'm sorry, Joe.
We'll hit a pause. Come back. Hour two, you're going to hear, as we mentioned, from Cal Dubas, Brendan Shanahan, and Sheldon Keefe. We'll pause on the Maple Leaf talk and have a look at what happened around the playoffs last night and what's going on right now. 2-2 Carolina and Boston deadlocked at deuces heading into the third period there now in the second intermission. Hockey Central continues. Two-hour tour today, folks. Smith & Jones returns tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern. This is Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. All right, welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Today it's a two-hour program. It is Maple Leafs Media Day. You'll hear from the coach, the general manager in hour two, Kyle Dubas, and Sheldon Keefe also. Brendan Shanahan will speak. This is part of the Zoom call they'll do at the top of the hour. We'll bring you the salient points and throw it around roundtable style as we have the full cast and crew of Hockey Central with us. Yours truly alongside Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Calgary. Take a one-game series lead on the Dallas Stars yesterday. 3-2 is the final score, and I suppose if you're going to put a theme to this one, Berkey, it's that the kids are all right, starting with Dylan Dubé and then Rasmus Anderson with the game-winning goal. Milan Lucic, his point streak continues. That line with Sam Bennett and Dylan Dubé outstanding again. Dennis Kurianov finds the back of the net. So does Jamie Benn for the Dallas Stars. Cam Talbot real good as well. How did you see the Calgary Flames yesterday as they draw first blood?
Well, I said going into the playoffs. Oh, sorry, my mic was off.
There we go.
I said going into the playoffs that I felt the four best teams on each side were the four round-robin teams, and I expected them all to advance. Then you watch the playoffs, and you're like, Boston appeared to be sleepwalking a little bit, and Dallas couldn't score goals. And you say to yourself, well, and worried about whether, you know, like what happens in the next round. But I look at this game and I look at it, that Dallas had so much trouble scoring goals in the round robin game. Ben Bishop not available.
Mm.
And I think that was a factor in a couple of the goals, not that Hudobin was at fault. But I heard Anthony talk about this and during the broadcast. And if you're going to rely on seeing eye shots and pinball shots from the point to get through, that's not a sustainable model for a good offense. And they really need more from their big guys.
Low percentage shots is the sexy term for it. But you're right. Anthony, Justin, hang on to your thoughts on that series. We got to hit the top of the hour break. We'll get more on the action last night. The action is still to come today. And the Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes game one, which we thought we were going to see last night. I'm surprised they're playing now. I thought Tampa and Columbus would still be playing as this show got underway. They're deadlocked at twos. Third period on the horizon. Hour two of our show next. Welcome back to the program. Hour two of Hockey Central. Smith & Jones returns tomorrow here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin Bourne, Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, yours truly, Jeff Merrick, here for another 60 minutes. Over the course of this hour, you'll hear from Sheldon Keefe, Kyle Dubas, and Brendan Shanahan as Leafs Zoom call day continues. Guys, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of different things before we get back to talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and play some more clips, perhaps, if we have time, from some of the players from this morning. We've already heard from Muzzin and Austin Matthews and John Tavares. Off the ice today, the Pittsburgh Penguins. We saw Jim Rutherford. Berkey, we'll start with you. We saw Jim Rutherford say that things need to change. There was no mincing of words. Jim Rutherford is a bold general manager, not shy to pull the trigger on either trades or firings. And that is what he has done. The contracts of Sergei Gonchar, Jacques Martin, and Mark Recchi, assistants for Mike Sullivan, will not be renewed. You understand this one, don't you, as a GM?
Yeah, this is. You see this in football all the time. They're trying desperately to save the head coach. So they make him fire his offensive coordinator and a couple assistant coaches, get some new blood in, maybe look at it differently. I did it with Ron Wilson. I fired Tim Hunter and Rob Zettler. Neither firing was really fair for what those guys had contributed, but had to do it to try to save Ronnie. They did it with Babcock last summer, brought in two new assistants. And this is an attempt to save Mike Sullivan and get some new blood in there and some new ideas. He said he believed in the core of his team. I'm not sure watching that playoff series that I believe in the core of that team anymore.
If you were Jim Rutherford as a general manager, what would you do?
Oh, sorry.
Is Siri talking to you over
Siri,
there?
Siri just heard us talking and talked back.
What does Siri think Rutherford should do?
Yeah, Siri. No, but Jimmy Rutherford, he is a bold guy. He's an impatient guy. And I think he's trying to save his coach. But I having watched him play, I'm not sure that that's a competitive core anymore. See, the problem is, like, I think Stewie mentioned it earlier, the issue is these other teams are all selfish. And they try to get better, too. So it's really unfair. And they scout you, and they watch what you do.
What?
So,
they watch your games?
And this is why you say, well, this team got better in the offseason. Well, you got to measure it against the improvements of the other teams. So I look, for example, this year. You look at the East, Pittsburgh, bring in Patrick Marleau. Tampa Bay, which has a far better team, brings in Blake Coleman, Zach Bogosian, and Barkley Goodrow.
That third line looked good again yesterday.
Yeah, who got better? Who got, like, for Tampa, they got less European, more North American, harder nosed, clear in the game last night with the edge they have now. So I just look at the teams around them. I say, okay, Pittsburgh, they're a good team, and they've got rings. You know, they go to buy gas. Guess what? They got rings on their fingers. But I look at, and this is what Toronto has to evaluate. So, okay, if we can make a move, let's say they move a forward, a high-paid forward, and get a good defenseman. So they've taken, and maybe Robertson replaces that good forward. But at the same time, the teams around them are going to add people too. And you got a flat cap. We haven't really talked about the cap. Flat cap for 81 years. Now, the Leafs' insistence on paying ridiculous signing bonuses will actually bear some fruit here.
Yep.
Because they've got players now who are cash under cap. So they're a team that has cap room but doesn't want to spend on the cap can take that player on. So they've actually put themselves in a good position to move guys.
Quick little clarification there for fans that may not understand that. The Nylander is a perfect example. The lion's share of the money is up front for Nylander. So his cap hit stays high, but the actual money you are paying is lower. So if you're a team that just wants to fill up its cap space but doesn't want to pay the actual dollar amount, he's attractive.
Yeah, and the easiest way to do the math for listeners, and I think that's important that we explain this. Let's say a guy's making $10 million a year, but on July 1st of each year, he gets a $5 million signing bonus. So he's paid, or $15 million in Auston Matthews' case. So in Nylander's case last summer, he got, I think, what, 12, Justin? $12 million on July 1st? So his cap,
right? Yep.
His cap is figured by total salary divided by number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But his cash is actually lower. He's at $5 million cash, so he's cash under cap. And those players are easier to trade. So let's say they can bring in a defenseman. Same time, the Rangers are adding a potential superstar in Alexis Lafreniere. Other teams make other moves, sign free agents. I mean, it's not just a case of how much you can improve your team. How much can you improve your team with the other thermometers around you are also going up? So It's tricky. Hard cap for 2 years. It's going to be 5 years hard cap. And I predicted a wage rollback. The players took a 10% deferral and a 20% cap on escrow. Escrow is going to be closer to 40%. So that 20% is gone, long gone. So the players have taken a 20% pay cut and a 10% deferral. It's still going to be tight under the cap, but they've got to improve their team, but they've also got to be mindful of the teams around them getting better as well.
Want to get back to the Penguins quickly. Capologist Bourne, your thoughts on the Pittsburgh Penguins and what's next? Gonchar, Martin, and Recchier now off the bench.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I guess it becomes, you know, the most important thing, you know, in all of this happens and then sort of the 2 weeks after the season where you make the decision on what you believe went wrong. And this is where the best laid plans, you can execute your vision perfectly, but if you get it wrong in these 2 weeks in assessing, you know, what is actually wrong with your team, it doesn't even matter. It's not going to work out for you. So what is the problem with the Pittsburgh Penguins? And to Berkey's point, like, is the core still an effective core? Well, last year, Sidney Crosby finished second in Hart Trophy voting, you know, and he's not that far off that. Evgeny Malkin, you wonder, you know, what's left in that tank. What do you expect from him going forward? I still think he's effective. And then it's just a question of, if you don't believe that, how drastic are you willing to get? Isn't Evgeny Malkin trade something you would seriously consider? Well, when it comes to the assistant coaches, I've never fully understood it because you know, if they have a system that they want to play, let's say you're running the power play and you want to do a 1-3-1 scheme, if the head coach doesn't want to do that, then he says, well, no, that's, you know, that's, we're not doing that. That's his call at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So it's like the head coach has vet all of the decisions that these guys have made. And so bringing in new guys to suggest something different, it's still the same guy saying, yes, I like that, or no, I don't. So I get that it's sending a message, and I get you're trying to save the coach. I just don't know how much is really going to affect results at the end of the day.
David Krejci, by the way, has just scored now 3-2 Boston Bruins early in the third. Stewie, when you remove the assistants, like Pittsburgh has just done with Gonchar, Jacques Martin, and Mark Recchi, how much is that felt in the room?
Yeah, it sort of gets guys a little uneasy and puts them on notice, right? But again, they should already know that, you know, as I mentioned off the top of the show, that Jim Rutherford doesn't play any games, and no one is safe other than Malkin and, you know, Crosby and maybe Letang. No one is safe. And, you know, I almost think, you know, maybe Pittsburgh Penguins are Guns N' Roses. Maybe it's time for, you know, Axel Rose and Malkin to maybe get another challenge. Maybe they're not happy with what's going on in Pittsburgh. So people thought I was crazy when I was mentioning if they got that number one pick, should they look at moving one of their studs? And that's a possibility. Maybe they've achieved all they can with this group. Maybe they're maybe they're starting to top out like the Chicago Blackhawks did a couple of years ago now that they've won all those cups. So I like what they've done over the years and plugging in these guys from Wilkes-Barre, these guys coming up and plugging into, a number 6, 7, 8 role. But they need defense. Goaltending needs to step up a little bit more at key times. But I think those 1B guys really need to step up. But if I'm Jim Rutherford, I go the same route that he usually does and make a big, big splash and really changing, you know, the culture of this team.
Keep the GNR reference alive. Jim Rutherford's run out of patience. Go ahead, Berkey.
Yeah, I think people should expect, like Justin said, to do it, you know, a couple days after it happens, or Dale Tallon getting let go, you know, before everyone's really even back off the plane. I think you're going to see more of that as teams are eliminated, because a lot of teams have personnel. The average contract or typical contract in the NHL for off-ice employees, coaches, scouts, that group, GMs, expire on June 30th, so right after the draft. So if you're going to make changes, you typically see changes right after. This year, in Dale Tallon's case, my understanding is the owner went to him and said, look, your deal's up. Just work month to month till the end of the year, and then we'll sit down and talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the case here with these guys. If their contracts are not being renewed, they were probably extended week to week or month to month till the season ended. I predict you'll see a number of changes like this quickly, right on the heels of elimination.
From any of the teams that have already been eliminated, or is that?
I think done a few, and I think a few more to come.
Interesting. Okay. Want to get to a couple of more things here. And as we mentioned, 3-2 Boston right now, early in the third period at Scotiabank Arena. Last night we saw the Vegas Golden Knights. I'll tell you, you know, bless Chicago for what they were able to do against the Edmonton Oilers. And that was spectacular based on their regular season finish. But man, Vegas is on a different planet than almost every other team right now. That was a buzzsaw. Like, something happened when the coaching change occurred from Gerard Gallant to Peter DeBoer, and this is no slight on Gerard Gallant, but it's almost as if, Berkey, Peter DeBoer has supercharged this team yet again, and they just, like, shift after shift after shift. It's a relentless forecheck from Vegas. That was outstanding yesterday.
It was. But you take, again, it's like Tampa. You take an elite team because they were already there, and you add Martinez, you add Cousins, you add Leonard, and all of a sudden they said, okay, we're already elite, but we're trying to win. And that's my caution with the Maple Leafs. Okay, if you get better, look at the team. Look at Tampa. How much better is Tampa now? So to me, Vegas looked great. Max Pacioretty showed no rust for a guy that came in. I thought he was fine. But they are going to be a handful for whomever they play.
If and when Vegas is in the Stanley Cup final, it'll be interesting to see how the goaltenders have split their time, because I don't think going into the trade deadline they foresaw the pandemic being the reason to make a deal. But having the tandem like they do now, given the way that these games are right on top of each other in all these series, and there's so many games, I got to believe they play both goaltenders. It's really tough to find a flaw in that team, and I don't think Chicago's the team to find any in the first round here.
Is, yeah,
thought that, and I thought that we'd be seeing Fleury by game two, but with Chicago only mustering 19 shots, it's no wonder that, you know, sorry, 20 shots. That no wonder Leonard had third star honors last night.
Riley Smith with a pair, and listen, Robin Leonard gets the start. Marc-Andre Fleury, since day one with the Vegas Golden Knights, has been the face of the franchise, the first pick, all of it. Build the whole thing around him. And he doesn't get the start. Does that surprise anybody? Should it surprise anybody? Should we read anything into Marc-Andre Fleury not starting last night?
Yes.
And that would be, sir?
That Leonard outplayed him the last 10 games. What was Leonard's record the last six games he started? 5-1? Guess what? It's not. It's the same thing with the New York Rangers playing Shesterkin if they played him over, over Lundqvist. You can't be sentimental when you pick a goalie.
I think the only thing saving this situation is it's Pete DeBoer coming in as a new coach, and he left his goaltending up to chance in San Jose with Martin Jones, and they really left them out to dry. So he's coming in not taking any chances. He's going with who he thinks is the number one guy and not really worried about the backlash. So hopefully it works. But I think I personally thought Fleury is the guy, but we'll see. It's going to make for a really interesting offseason now with Leonard going to free agency.
Standing by to hear comments from Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe, Brendan Shanahan. It is Leafs Media Day. We'll get back on the Maple Leaf page here in a couple of moments on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Meanwhile, I want to get back to the 5-0 game. Fourth longest game in NHL history. Jonas Korpisalo, a new record. Kelly Rudy's 73 save performance in the Easter Epic in 1987 is now a thing of the past. 85 saves on 85 and 88 shots by Jonas Korpis, 151 shots total in that game yesterday. Seth Jones, 65 minutes and 6 seconds. Victor Hedman, welcome back, 57 minutes. No Steven Stamkos in this one. Tampa wins it 3-2 in the fifth overtime frame. And Justin, you made the point in the first hour, and for those that weren't with us, if you can expand on it, that a loss like this for a team like Columbus is more crushing than it would be if it was Tampa that lost that. And oh, by the way, the OT winner, according to ECHL.com, your OT winner, Justin, was in the league's 11th longest game in history. 106 minutes and 23 seconds. Utah beats Fresno. Do you remember the final score?
Not a clue. No, I don't.
4-3, April 14th, 2008. Anyway.
The funny part, Jeff, is I was so gassed. I was so far behind the play that when there was a turnover, I ended up on a breakaway. So it wasn't it was actually the circumstances. I was so gassed it got to me. But the Tampa Columbus here is why I say that is just think about playoffs last year. And I know a lot of people say momentum doesn't carry from game to game, but the way Columbus punched Tampa square in the mouth in game one, Tampa's up 3-0, and you go on Twitter and people are going, oh, Tampa's going to win the series in 3, lol. You know, like it's like, and then Columbus ends up winning that game and Tampa was reeling. And I don't think they ever really recovered. You know, they were kind of, I think they just thought it would work itself out. So this is a situation where Tampa came into the series a little bit more prepared. And if you're Columbus and you're not the more talented team, you need a game like that. You need to punch them in the mouth again and to start on the right note. Them taking a blow like that, you know, and being the lesser of the two teams, that's a huge hill to climb. I think that eliminated their chances of any serious upset.
Stewie?
What was the question? Sorry.
We're just talking about the Tampa and Columbus scenario.
Yeah,
I'm
getting lactic acid buildup just thinking about it. That's why my mind's a little wonky here. And 5 OTs, that's almost two games in a row. And, you know, I think I played my career high in a game was maybe 18 minutes, and I legit had to get an O2 tank out. I can't fathom playing 65 minutes or 30 minutes. I think Columbus had 12 players averaging 30 minutes, which is a career high for most of them. So it's as a fan, it's definitely, you know, great to watch. But normally I think the players would be exhausted and not really wanting to be a part of something like that. But they had a 4.5 month break. They're coming back well rested. I'm sure every single player there was enthralled to be a part of that. And Kelly Rudy last night, he looked kind of sad that that the record was broken. I don't know if he was shedding a tear near the end there. I felt sorry for him. But records are meant to be broken as well. But it's an amazing record that stood for 33 years. And it couldn't happen to a harder working goalie than Corposalo.
True. But I'll tell you what, about Kelly Rudy's Easter epic, I can recall everything about where I was for that game. We talked about, Brookie, you mentioned, always going to remember that game where you were. That Kelly Rudy, Bob Mason Easter epic game, I will remember.
Where's that helmet?
Forever. Oh, what a, and I was with it from the opening draw right until that final goal by Pat LaFontaine. You have a final thought on that Tampa series, Brookie?
Well, I think Game two is, I'm with Justin. I think it really tears a piece of your heart out to play that hard and that well and not get anything for it. You know, regular season, you get a point anyway. But so to me, it's going to be hard to recover from. Now, they played, I think it's going to be 4-6 when they play game two. It'll be 4-6 for Columbus, including an overtime game against the Leafs and then a 5-overtime game. But they do roll 4 and they do play 60. So if there's a team designed to bounce back from a physical epic battle like that, it's probably Columbus.
You know, Jeff, I have to ask you a hypothetical, Jeff. Sorry to butt in here.
Yeah,
if you're the coaching staff with Columbus and you know for you to win this series, it's probably going to go 6 or 7 games, would you consider maybe after like the second or third OT having that conversation with your staff saying, hey, do we throw this thing because we need to rest up because this thing's going 7? Do you think so or no? Does that cross their mind at least?
Let's see. John Tortorella?
No.
I thought I was switching goalies. I thought maybe they'd roll over Zlikins or something after a couple OTs.
I thought you were going to say, should we pull back Seth Jones on some of the minutes here, maybe change the goal.
Or have a double stretch man. Let's have a double stretch man. We're going to go or bust right now.
Braden Point didn't have the season that many thought Braden Point would have, could have had, but these playoffs, Braden Point has been spectacular. And then you remember, here's a guy that had hip surgery last summer, so he couldn't lift, couldn't get his strength. There are always some players, maybe Morgan Riley falls into this category as well, players that the pause really helped, because they're able to gain their strength, get their bodies conditioned to start to play hockey again. Morgan Riley was one for the Maple Leafs, but Braden Point looks night and day than what he looked like in the regular season. He is on fire. A pair of goals yesterday and the big overtime winner that's going to be on all the highlights from here to eternity in the fourth longest game in NHL history. Berkey, I just think Braden Point's been outstanding.
Well, he is a 200-foot player. He's a guy that contributes offensively but truly plays 200 feet. He was excellent last night, excellent in the round-robin games. Calgary kid, he's a dynamite player.
How about if you're Gavrikov and you have to watch that highlight for the rest of your life? You're just going to wear one in the face on the highlights for the rest of your life.
Oh, man, just keeled over. Just not good.
Torts is probably like, it's a long way from your heart. Block it again.
Tape an aspirin to it.
Okay, so there's that game. Right now, as we speak, it's the Boston Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this one. This is the first game. We thought we were going to see it last night, but then as they went into this marathon OT, the NHL said, we're not going to make you guys go Tuesday night beer league style and start one at 11 o'clock. Get your rest. We'll play it at 11 a.m. instead the next day. It's 3-2 right now, Bruins. How do we see this series? Ricky, we'll start with you. How do you see the Bruins? Let's be honest. The Bruins did not look good at all during the round robin.
No, and the Bruins had a real tough preparation. They had 9 guys out of camp when they started training camp. They had 9 guys in quarantine, and Kasha didn't even join their team till a couple of days ago. So I thought they looked flat, and I had predicted the 4 round-robin teams would all advance, and I'm like, whoa, Carolina looks so good. Boston looks so flat. But I think good teams, it's really hard to turn on. It's not like a light switch where you can turn on an effort and turn on a cohesion. But that's what Boston appears to be doing today. They were sharp right out of the gate. I thought Dallas didn't show the lethargy they showed early on in the round-robin game. So some teams can turn it on. And Boston turned right out of the gate. They've been good.
Stewie?
Yeah.
Or Justin. Someone jump in.
I'll jump in. I noticed that a lot of the picks, ESPN's in particular, I think they had 8 of their 10 people pick Carolina to win this series. And it's like Boston didn't suddenly become un-Boston. Like, they didn't look good for a few games in the round robin, no doubt. But boy, this is the President's Trophy winning team this year. You know, this is a real hockey team with an unbelievable goaltending tandem and all the pieces. So, yeah, they hadn't found it in the early going, but I'm not shocked to see them playing well here. I still like Carolina and like their chances, but this to me, just watching, you know, 2.5 periods of this, this has been the best hockey I've seen since everyone has come back. This is going to be an awesome series.
Stewie, the biggest problem with an 11 o'clock start is when you eat. That's the best part.
The night before. The best part, Berkey. What are you talking about? You get to have breakfast and lunch. You get to have brunch, pancakes, penne, and pasta. That's the best part.
But if you're used to eating 5.5-6 hours before game time,
yeah,
you got to get up early and eat and then try and get back to sleep. That's the biggest problem with this start time, but it's for both teams.
That's a tough one. Thoughts on this series, Stewie?
I think people were just shocked at how easily Carolina had, you know, took over that the New York Rangers series. And I think even more shocking that they were surprised that the young guys that were carrying this Carolina team is just not slowing down the playoffs. Usually guys that put up big numbers in the season as young guys sort of have to learn, you know, have a learning curve for the playoffs. But Aho, Teravainen, and Shveshnikov, all those guys are taking their game to a higher level. So I think with that now, they think they're going to sort of just run through this East. And I sort of compare them almost to the Vegas of the Eastern Conference because they're just so fast. They push the pace. They turn pucks over. They're in your face.
Oh,
constant
just scored.
Pressure.
All tied up. Who's that, Hayden Fleury from the point?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, is it? Who was it? I couldn't see the number there. Shot from the point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
Hayden Fleury, an amazing player as well. You know, he's really
you were just saying
there,
that
when the game's on the line there.
He can just sift him in from the point like nobody else. Pass to Karras.
Yeah, I think what's good now, and one thing people don't really put a lot of stock into is the trust in the system. And I think with Carolina, they don't just trust in what Rod Brendamore's saying. They believe that they have a chance to win a Stanley Cup. So when you believe in the coach and the system, you're going to get these results that Carolina's getting. So I would not be surprised if they
overtime.
I don't know if you. Oh my God! If they have overtime to start this triple header off, that'd be bad news. I don't know if you guys are watching the broadcast, but Rod the Bod had his shirt off at intermission at BMO Field here, and I can tell you why this team is good. It's because they're all terrified of that man. Good Lord, 50 years old, he's just absolutely shredded.
So we've got 9 minutes and 50 seconds remaining in the third period here. Berkey says overtime, and all I can think is if you're the Islanders and the Capitals, and the last overtime we saw yesterday had 5 overtime periods attached to it. Are you thinking, yeah, we're not playing till 8 o'clock tonight and we're going to bump the Habs and the Flyers at Scotiabank Arena here?
Well, I will tell you one thing. It's way too early. I was kidding. We said overtime. It's 9.5 minutes left. One thing that's impressed me in these first few games is the quality and the standard of officiating. They are letting marginal stuff go. They're not putting the whistle away. No one thinks that's a good idea. You put the whistle away, then players will take advantage of the system and the best team might not win.
Did you think that breakaway last night was a penalty?
I thought it was a penalty.
Berkey called it a mugging.
It was a mugging.
That's right. You use that. This should be a new rule, mugging. That's right.
And so people are breaking down. He didn't do this. He didn't do that. And it reminds me of a Supreme Court justice who said, I can't give you a definition of pornography, but I know it when I see it. That was a penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do we go from there? We go to the Carolina and the Boston Bruins, all tied up at 3s. That game with about 8 minutes and 30 seconds remaining in it. We will hit a pause. You will hear from Leafs general manager Kyle Dubas, Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe, and Brendan Shanahan speaking as well today as it is Leafs Media Day. We'll get back to Maple Leafs clips, not from the player point of view, but from the coach and the GM and above. This is Hockey Central. We're all aboard today. Yours truly, alongside Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back in a flash. Welcome back to the program. Alongside Brian Burke, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart, I'm Jeff Merrick. We're going to get back here to hearing from Maple Leafs personnel. We heard from some of the players in Hour 1, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Jake Muzzin. We're going to start hearing now from Brendan Shanahan, Sheldon Keefe, and we'll start with the general manager guys, Kyle Dubas. So a number of clips coming in from the Zoom call from the Leafs brass. This is Kyle Dubas talking about shortcomings this season. The question asked by our very own Chris Johnston.
And Chris, the way that we started the year was a disappointment. We were 25th in the league when we made the coaching change. And I think the biggest disappointment of the year, if I had to pinpoint it, would be the fact that we showed at multiple times throughout the year in single games and even for stretches of weeks or months what we're really capable of. And that we just were not able to string that together consistently over a prolonged stretch of the season, and certainly not in the playoffs. So I think you're, from my perspective, most disappointed in the fact that we did not capitalize and play to our potential as often as we could have. And I think it's to do it 82 games a year, and then you want to do it for 16 wins in the spring and win the Stanley Cup. It's not realistic to think that it's going to be that way every single night, but I think what we need to get to is that it's as often as humanly possible for us to rise to where we want. We need to play the way that it's not a dream in terms of how we can play, because we show it multiple times throughout the season this year, just the fact that we could not do it as often as required to reach our potential. So that would be the most disappointing factor from my end.
So the general manager talking about what the Maple Leafs are capable of, seeing that occasionally throughout the season, Berkey, but being disappointed that there wasn't a consistency attached to it.
I think it's a very honest answer, and I think it's what we talked about. You watched the Tampa game, the last game they played, 2-1, did everything right, and you're like, okay, so they know how to do it. The coaches have done their job. Each player understands what's required to play that kind of a game. But when they don't do it consistently, then you can't blame the coaches, because they know how to do it. Players have demonstrated that. So I think that was a very candid answer.
Justin?
Yeah, I thought the line, it's not a dream, was particularly, that stood out to me, where, you know, he's leaning on the fact that, you know, they've seen it. This team has shown that they can play a certain way and that they're very effective when they do. My concern there is every team plays well sometimes. You know, you can go through the Red Wings season and say, boy, if we can just play like we did that second period against the Montreal Canadiens or whatever, you know, we'll be right there. Your team has to show it with a level of consistency to believe in it. And so, sure, they have a high ceiling when they play this one certain way, but I don't necessarily know that you can just count on it to happen more, you know, in the days to come without a change.
Yeah, I think people just sort of forgot or just failed to misremember that we're not talking about the Detroit Red Wings or the Rangers or Montreal. We're talking about a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations, and they were supposed to take major steps towards that, and that's why they re-signed all these guys. That's why they kept the main core together. And the results just aren't there. And I remember when we were talking on the show earlier in the season when Tampa Bay benched Kucherov in overtime, they did that to send a message. They weren't happy where they were at that point of the season. They were losing. They had to, you know, fix their game. And you got 80 games, 60, 70, 80 games to really fix that team. And you have to do that with this Maple Leaf team. You can't just say, well, let's just wait till playoffs and the big guns will come and save the day. No, whatever the symptoms are, now, those were symptoms in October, November, December. So you have to find a way to get through to these guys. And I know some guys are high paid. Maybe you got to bench a guy. Maybe you got to put a guy on pump four for a week to send that message. But you got to have that accountability. When you don't have that accountability top to bottom, you're going to have a club and not a team.
Well said. Oh, that Tampa game, by the way, that was against Ottawa. Anthony Duclair had tied it up, and John Cooper sat Kucherov down, and Anthony Cirelli ended up winning it in overtime. But you guys have heard me talk about Cirelli too often here on this program, so I'll stop. Let's hear from Brendan Shanahan, Toronto Maple Leafs president, talking about, from his office, how much confidence he has in what the Maple Leafs are doing.
I think we certainly acknowledge, and we talked about this just about an hour ago. I think that we certainly in some ways have taken a step back, but we're really determined in a way to, you know, in spite of that, we think that there's an opportunity to take more steps forward. I think that, first off, I want to say, like, I have complete faith in Kyle as a general manager. in Sheldon as a coach and complete confidence in what we're going to do here in Toronto. I think that obviously I'm not going to talk about other people that are with other teams, but I am going to talk about the direction that we're going now. It's a difficult thing to talk about when you're 2 days removed from losing. But I think our potential and our potential for growth is even greater than it was a couple of years ago. So I'm confident we're going to get it done. I'm absolutely confident that we're going to be determined to get it done. We just have to go to work. And on days like today, you know what? You got to face the music, and it's not pleasant. And we won't be the only team doing this. Every team other than the one team that wins the Stanley Cup will be having these same questions and talking about what about next year and what changes can we make. We've identified and seen some of the things that that are deficient in our group. We've been around long enough now where we've seen them, and we want to make those improvements. But again, it's no time to feel sorry for yourself. It's time to get back to work. And I have a lot of faith in Kyle as a general manager and Sheldon as a coach, our ownership group and the support that they give us, and our fans. They're frustrated. I mean, it's been 4 years in a row now we've gone out in the first round. Our fans in Toronto, though, it's been 16 years since they've won a round, and it's been 53 years since we've won a cup. So you inherit a little bit of history here, and so you have to be understanding for a fan base that is excited and wants to be rewarded and get results. And this is a results business, and we're determined to get those results, Steve.
Okay, so a couple of things in that one. One, the full vote of confidence for Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe. The other, and this is, I think, one that people will key in on, Brendan Shanahan saying the team has taken a step back. Quickly, he said, we believe we can take a couple of steps forward. I think the one thing, Berkey, that people will grab onto is we feel we've taken a step back. Any areas, obviously, that you can point to, you could say, this is where the Maple Leafs took a step back?
Well, they didn't make the playoffs, I think is what he's saying. They made the play-in, but not the playoffs. And I would view that as a step back when they were in the playoffs a year ago. The one thing I'm disappointed is I didn't hear any pledge to address any of these deficiencies. And I think and I'm a season ticket holder. And I know there are people think I don't like the Leafs because I got fired by the Leafs. That's just not true. No one does better the Leafs win than we do. So to me, I'm looking at it very objectively. As a season ticket holder, I would have liked someone to say, we know we have to get better on defense. We know we have to upgrade our D. We know we have to get bigger. And what it sounds to me is more like the emperor has no clothes. You know, we believe in our analytics approach. We believe it'll work. We're going to stick with it. And that would concern me as a season ticket holder and as a media person is like, I was hoping for some pledge for change today, some improvement in the areas where deficiency is obvious, maybe to everyone but them. The baffling part for me is Shanny played as hard as anybody. Like, he played on teams where they had high skill but lots of grit too. And I can't imagine he and I watching the same game and not seeing the same deficiencies.
Stewie?
Well, I called it when Sheldon Keefe first came in that the season's probably going to be a write-off just based on the fact that they're going to get a mulligan because he didn't have a full training camp. So I know it's disappointing, but I just think from an evaluation standpoint, they're going to say, well, you know, we didn't have a training camp, but, you know, COVID, and we got to get to know the players. But I was just going to say, Berkey, that their solution for next year, I think it is the problem. Look who they have coming in to sort of save the day. It's too much pressure to put on a Nick Robertson rookie player. I know he's going to be a great future player, but it's too much pressure to slot him in now to come and save the day. You have a Russian player coming in. They have to re-sign Mikheyev. They have a KHL defenseman coming in. That's not solving the problem, as I mentioned at the top of the show. They need to get bigger. They need to get stronger. They need to get grittier. So that is a simple fix based on the fact it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. You need a couple guys that are going to come in at 800 or 1.5, 1.6 that could come in and do the job. So we'll see. But, again, that's why we're on the outside looking in. And these guys are making the decisions because they have their belief, and they're going to go down believing in what they believe, whether they believe it or not. That's a lot of beliefs.
Justin, what do you believe?
I believe that that's a group who genuinely believes the idea of luck and that they've been unlucky. And that's right or wrong, and I think a lot of people would say wrong. I think that they think they've constructed something good and that changing courses would not be true to the vision, and that, you know, one more crack at this and enough cracks, they feel that they'll be the team that starts to get some bounces and it goes their way. It doesn't sound to me like Kyle Dubas is, stepping back from the plan. And, you know, to the credit of Shanahan, whether he agrees fully with the plan or not, I think he has to support the guy he has in the job. And so I think that's what he's making an effort to do. And the old run it back thing, you see how it goes one more time. I don't think you get it another time if you run it back this time and it doesn't work.
Okay, so here's my issue with this, with what you just said and what I said and what Stewie said. What teams have won the Cup in the last 10 years, last 5 years?
Big, fast, strong.
Big, fast, strong. Defense.
See, that's
solid.
Not true, though, Berkey. Like 2018 Pittsburgh Penguins had a terrible decor and were offense only.
Yeah, okay.
Well, offense heavy, not
okay.
Offense only.
Offense heavy. Okay, one team. So you win the argument, Justin? You just came up with one team.
Well, you asked me who's won the Cup, Berkey. That's one of the last 3 years.
St. Louis Blues. Okay. Like, look at the team. Look at the teams that win. The common elements. And even who'd Pittsburgh beat?
Nashville and San Jose.
Yeah, fairly good-sized teams. I mean, there's a common denominator here that despite an aberration that Justin can point out, like the little dink at school that always has an answer for the teacher.
sucks when there's an answer, huh?
Fact of the matter is, the common denominator is that these teams are big and they have solid defense corps with some exceptions. And the Pittsburgh team relied on spectacular goaltending, too. So to me, I don't get it. Like, it's not a classroom argument. It's not a classroom argument. You could say, well, this, we believe in our approach, it'll work, when every other team around you that's competitive is trying to do it a different way. I don't understand it.
Further to Justin's point, though, yes, Pittsburgh won the Stanley Cup without a stellar defense. Vegas got there without a stellar defense. No one would ever accuse the St. Louis Blues last season of being fast. I have a hard time with the idea that there's one formula to win the Cup.
No, I didn't
Cup.
Say that.
Like, I have a hard time with that one.
They have common components. Most of the teams that are competitive have common components.
You mentioned goaltending. Let's get back to the general manager. Here's Kyle Dubas on Frederik Andersen's play this season.
I think Fred had... I thought Fred for us, and I'll speak to the playoffs. The season's such a, you know, up and down thing to discuss with the pause of a number of months. But, you know, Fred had, I think it was a 9.35 save percentage for us in the playoffs. And I think certainly in the season, he had the one stretch there just before he got hurt or right after where he was like our team in a little bit of a rut. But I thought, especially as the season was coming to an end, when I say coming to an end, I mean before we went on the break, before the pandemic began, Mark, Fred was playing his best hockey for us, for sure. He was excellent. He was right before the stretch, we went on the losing streak in November, and even during that stretch, I thought he was excellent then as well, and really gave us a chance to continue winning games and collecting points, even when we weren't really playing that well at the end of October and early November. Two games that particularly come to mind, I think, you know, certainly against Las Vegas here at home, I thought they really outplayed us. Fred gave us a chance, it gave us a point. And then against Philadelphia the Saturday night right after. And even when we went on the losing streak, he continued to, you know, provide solid goaltending. And then at the end of the season, before the California trip when we were Florida, and then on the California trip and then here against Tampa at a pivotal time for us, I thought he played exceptionally well. And that was very good for us in the playoffs here. So I'm sure there are stretches like everybody on our team that he would like back in the season. But at the end of the year, when we were going down the stretch and in the playoffs, I thought Fred played very well. So he's a proud guy, and he's been a strong player for us now with our group for 4 years and is a key part of our team.
Before we get your thoughts on Kyle Dubas talking about Frederik Andersen, Berkey, the Bruins and the Hurricanes are headed to overtime. Here, exactly. It's 2020. We're going to OT, all the goofy finals. Justin, we'll start with you on this one. Dubas on Frederik Andersen's play, and do you think that this team is committed to him with 1 year remaining on his deal?
I think so. It sounds like, well, for one, we know that there's not exactly a whole lot of options with the salary cap situation as it is, and he's been pretty good. The one thread through a lot of the Dubas comments that, you know, I think you'd find a little concerning is not a defensiveness necessarily of the way they've done it, but just sort of an unwillingness to be like, you know, that the way the construction is not exactly as it should be. There seems to be a lot of, you know, this could have worked out differently or should have, and actually you've been pretty good, and actually it hasn't been that bad over here. You would have liked to have heard a little bit more of, we think we need to pivot in some direction or at least make some changes, you know, at the fringes at the very least.
Stewie, have a thought on that one?
Yeah, I think if and when they do decide to replace Freddie Andersen via trade or free agency, they're going to spend all their days, nights and days, looking for a replacement for Freddie Andersen. And he's one of those guys, I believe, once he's gone, you're going to really appreciate what he brought to the table. Coming under the spotlight with the media pressure every single night and performing, I think he's done a good job. I know some of the numbers in series deciding matches, he hasn't really shown up. But in my opinion, I think he's a top 5, 6, 7 goaltender in the National Hockey League. And you got to ride him, find a way to re-sign him. Because if not, you're going to be looking to replace them. Carter Hart's and Carey Price's and Merzlikins, these guys don't grow on trees. It's going to take a while to find a guy that could do the job that Freddie Andersen did in Toronto.
Rick, you have a thought on the Freddie question?
Yeah, I think Freddie was good all year. Like, Kyle's right, a couple stretches, but every goalie has bad stretches. Like Justin said, you know, you can point out and say, well, we prove we could do it. Well, every team has good stretches. Every team has bad stretches. I don't think he's the problem, but I wouldn't extend him at this point. I'd make him start next year and see how it goes.
Justin mentioned adjusting vision and, you know, here that, okay, we're going to pivot this way and this different direction. The Leafs general manager, Kyle Dubas, was asked about that during their Zoom call today, along with Sheldon Keefe and Brendan Shanahan. Here's how the Leafs general manager talks about his vision for the team.
I don't find myself transfixed on one thing. I think you all think that I have one way of going about things and that it's never changing, but I think anybody who knows me or works with me would probably tell you that it's pretty much the opposite. At the end of every season, regardless of what the outcome has been, whether at different levels we've won or we've been to the playoffs and fallen short, there's always a full review of where we're at. And the vision for me always has to be changing. I don't think any business or any team that just has one vision and one way of doing things that doesn't change is going to be successful in the long run. They might get lucky, but it's not a way to go about having sustainable success. And I think the moves that we've made over the last couple of seasons have indicated that it's not all just about one thing here. That'll certainly be the review that's done now with regards to where we're at and where we're going. I'm not someone that is stubborn with that, and the goal will be to get us in a different position next year, certainly, and get to the point where we're making progress and sustaining ourselves as a contending team year in and year out.
The vision is always changing. Caleb is saying,
that's
you guys,
encouraging.
I think the quote is, you guys think I only have one way to do things. And I think perhaps what he was winking at there was, how many of you, hands up, thought that Kyle Dubas was going to go out and get Kyle Clifford? Because that was the one that everyone sort of looked at and said, well, that doesn't seem like a Kyle Dubas move. But to Kyle's point, what he's trying to say is, don't be surprised at anything here. There's not one single way to get up to the top of the mountain.
Then that should have been in the messaging, not in the Q&A. Like, to me, you go out and meet with the media at the end of the year, you talk about everything you're going to say, you prepare careful notes. You want to deliver a strong message to your season ticket holders. That's and your sponsors, your key stakeholders. And in my mind, if that's – and I believe Kyle, by the way. I don't think Kyle's capable of lying. I really don't. I don't think he'd get in front of a microphone and lie. So I believe him. But to me, that can't be a Q&A. That's got to be a point that's made in the main address, that we have to change, and we're open to change. and we see teams around us adding components that we have to add. That's what I wanted to hear, and I didn't hear it from him or Shanny. I don't want it in a Q&A. Well, you guys think it only one way. Say it in your main address. Say we've got to address a couple of positional needs. We're not stuck to the same formula. That, to me, is the wrong place to have that message out, and now it gets buried. You know, it dribbles out. Say it in front of the microphone.
Stewie?
Yeah, I think it's obvious that they do have to make changes. This roster is constructed, but how are they going to make these changes other than making a big move out of one of the top four big guys here? So it's going to be interesting to see. But with me now, they're sort of locked in and sort of married to some guys that are coming in next year that I don't really think things are really going to change unless they do that blockbuster deal that everyone's sort of been calling for. So you know, I know he's a smart guy, but he's in a bit of a pickle here in every sense of the word.
You've worked alongside Kyle Dubas. Do you have your Dubas decoder ring on for that one, Justin?
Well, not necessarily, but I agree with Berkey wholeheartedly that, like, there is more pressure in Toronto to make your statements clear. Like, these press conferences are super important in terms of how the team is perceived and everything that comes behind it, and certainly that should have been a part of the main messaging. As I said earlier, I do get the sense that they believe, you know, just in listening to these comments, they believe they've been unlucky and that they're not far off, whether that's right or wrong. And, you know, there are other ways to do it, but I wouldn't be surprised. My guess would be that they roll back a team next year that doesn't look all that dissimilar to the one they tried to win with this year.
Abraham Lincoln said about luck, the funny thing about luck is the harder I work, the more luck I seem to have.
Stewie, right. Yes.
Can I get some clarification on this? Because
yes,
Dubas was just quoted as saying, we're not up against the cap, contrary to everyone's belief. So are they or are they not up against the cap for next year?
Given that it's flat and given the business that they have to do?
I think he's referring to the cash under cap guys, that they've got some flexibility. But they've got cap issues. Even if he's right and it's $3 or $4 million here, are there. They still got cap issues.
Do we have time for a Sheldon Keefe clip? No, are we having you on time? Lance Kennedy giving me the thumbs down. We don't have time. We're running out of time here. So that was Leafs Media Day. You can listen to all of this, as much of the Zoom calls as possible, whether it's Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Jake Muzzin, Mitch Marner, Morgan Riley, Shanahan, Keefe, heard plenty from Kyle Dubas as well, at our website at sportsnet.ca. Couple of moments here just around the table. This was media day, so the final wrap up before they have a pause and get back to business here. Berkey, how would you describe the Maple Leafs season that just was?
A disappointment. If I had to pick one word, disappointing.
Stewie?
And I think expectations were great. They didn't even make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Disappointing.
Stewie.
The end of gaming Game of Thrones, wanting more.
A little bleak, but okay. Justin, how would you sum it up?
I'll take disheartening. If you're a Leafs fan, like, it's so deflating, I guess, that they seem to be right there and there's all this hope, and it's just like it just wasn't there for them this year, so it's got to be a little disheartening.
Not the first time, though. I mean, I keep coming back to this idea that, you know, we really started talking about the Washington Capitals as Stanley Cup favorites in 2010, and they ran into Yaroslav Halak, Mike Camilleri, and Kirk Muller drawing up defensive assignments for the Habs. And then how long did it take that team to win the Stanley Cup? How many different coaches? How many different goaltenders? Until how many times did you hear, you can't win with this team? You can't win with Ovechkin? Well, that's true until it's not. I don't know. I keep coming back to that whole idea. I know there was more success for them along the way, but still, we shall see. So that's Maple Leaf Media Day on this edition of Hockey Central. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. Writer's Block is next. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.